This is CHUO 89.1 FM. Welcome to this week's episode of The Mosaic, your weekly show highlighting the voices of the community. Here, we guide you through today's social issues, introduce you to changemakers, and keep in touch with the arts, music, and events of the city. You can expect extensive research, in-depth analysis, and discussion. From CHUO's news team, this is The Mosaic. Today, an encampment at Uwatawa becomes part of a worldwide demonstration for Gaza. We bring you more from the sit-in and their calls to divest. Then, we head to the Ottawa International Food and Book Expo. We also have a conversation on Canadian Independent Bookstore Day with a local store owner. And finally, we look ahead to the Experience Ezzy Festival coming up on May 18th. Stick around, I'm Lauren Rolston, and we've got all that and more coming up on The Mosaic. It's been over a week since students at the University of Ottawa established a sit-in encampment on the front lawn of Tabaret Hall.
So we're here to ask the university divest, and we're here to ask them to disclose their divestments, and that's what we're here for today.
They intend to stay put until their calls for divestment are met with action from the university.
Yes, Canada is just as complicit in this genocide as the U.S. Shame!
Shame!
The same university that comes out every year to condemn the existence of the residential school grade, the same university that gives their empty land acknowledgement and feigns empathy with our indigenous brothers and sisters, now remains silent in the face of a live genocide and a discovery of mass graves.
They named corporations like Scotiabank, CAE, and Airbus among some of the school's investments complicit in funding the killing of Gazans, a toll that has now reached over 40,000. CHUO's Bushra Benhamed attended the encampment early on and had a conversation with one of its organizers. Here she is with more.
On April 29th, I visited Tabaret Lawn, where a sit-in for Palestine, held by Integrity Not Spite Against Palestine and the Palestinian Student Association, was taking place. The energy of the event was relatively calm, even with the chants and the chatter going on. And while the main objective is to serve as a protest demanding for divestment from both financial and academic institutions that support the genocide, it felt like a community event. It was a space for conversation, for education, and for the community to come together as a united front for the Palestinian cause. I had the opportunity to interview one of the organizers, a Palestinian student named Yara. I asked her about the demands of the groups, about the stand the university has taken, and had a conversation about the biases and priorities of both the school and the Canadian government.
I wanted to ask what the aim of the sit-in is and what your exact demands are, if you can just summarize them for our listeners.
We have three main aims. So the first one would be for the university to give us full disclosure of all their direct and indirect investments, because the most recently updated one was in 2022. So we want a recent list of all indirect and direct investments. The second one would be divestment from any and all corporations that are involved in surveillance, occupation, and murder of Palestinians, both in Gaza and in the West Bank. And the third one would be to officially adopt the Arab Canadian Lawyer Association's official definition for anti-Palestinian racism, and, you know, implement that.
I just want to talk about corporations divestment, especially financially, when it comes to the university, corporations and stuff like that. I would like to talk about also the Canadian government using tax money, sending it all to fund the genocide. There are a lot of things going on in the country right now. We have the cost of living crisis. We have Canadians having to resort to MAID to get away from that. And I'd just like a comment from you about, like, what does that indicate about the priorities of our government?
Yeah, so I mean, that definitely shows how misplaced our government's priorities are, because like you said, there's so much happening in our own country. There's so many people that need the aid here. There's the, like you said, the cost of living crisis. There's homelessness. There's so much that needs to be done here in terms of even the healthcare system as well, that could be improved. And that money going overseas to fund genocide is an injustice to both, of course, the people like this genocide is happening to, but also to Canadians here, because that money should be used for the betterment of Canada rather than going to, you know, to fund genocide overseas.
And I just wanted to ask about the actual physical, the things that are happening here. I wanted to ask what the significance is of physically occupying space on an institution like UOttawa, and how much change you are all hoping to achieve in this time that you're planning on having these encampments or these protests.
Yeah, so we've had a divestment campaign since November, and we kind of put out initial demands that we wanted the university to divest from some of these corporations, and we were met with virtually silence. They didn't really entertain they weren't open to discussion or dialogue. And so with things escalating in Gaza even more, I mean, the genocide's entered its over 200th day. Just last week, they uncovered mass graves in the Nasser Medical Complex in Gaza. So things are clearly still escalating 200 days into this genocide, and that it makes it imperative that we physically show up, and we physically we're there to physically make our demands, as well as it's a form of solidarity for, most importantly, our people in Gaza, to show them that we're present and we're physically here, as well as with all the actions happening across the US and Canada. It's a form of solidarity to show that as a people, we're all putting up one united front and our demands for divestment are clear.
So I wanted to ask, students are clearly being silenced and suffocated, not just here, but Columbia, McGill, so on and so forth. And I wanted to ask you how you feel as a student.
Yeah, so as I feel, and I'm sure many other students share that sentiment, we feel very disappointed and let down by our university, because this is supposedly a place for inclusion and diversity and free speech. But it always seems that the Palestine protests or Palestine actions are the ones that are shut down. And it feels like there's an agenda there with that. We're a movement of many different people. We represent the people. There's Jewish allies, there's Indigenous allies, there's all kinds of supporters from all different backgrounds. And it's disappointing to see the university shut down such a vast and diverse group of organizers with virtually no reason.
I wanted to ask, in relation to the statement by the university, they clearly highlighted their intolerance towards encampments, and they kind of implied that, you know, encampments are the antithesis of peaceful protests. So I just wanted to ask, what do you think about their statement saying that you guys are doing something dangerous? And what are actually the dangers of that attempt at a negative connotation of the word encampment?
Yeah, so we were definitely disappointed by the statement, but we also found it quite ironic that the university would come out and say that these occupations and these encampments are not allowed, given the fact that, one, the university is built on stolen Indigenous land, and given the fact that they are actively funding occupation overseas. So for them to be anti-occupation but then not call out the elephant in the room, which is their investment in this occupation, is quite ironic. And also the fact that they kind of assume prior to that this is going to be a violent, puts students at risk, because then it's going to have, then it puts the opposing end, like agitators and you know, anyone willing to instigate, to assume that we're violent. And that's a connotation that's deeply hurtful to our community, because it's been associated with our community before. And clearly, as anyone passing by can see, it's a sit-in, everyone is open, and we're not engaging with any instigators. It's very peaceful as it is now. So yeah, automatically assuming that it's violent, you know, is a safety risk for us, as well as incredibly disappointing for us as students to hear that. Where our whole aim with this is to bring the community together and make our demands for divestment clear, but also it's a place for the people to gather. We have a lot of art activities going around. People are making posters and banners. We've also set up a little library for people to kind of learn more about occupation, colonization, all these things. Community members have been stopping by and bringing in food and drinks. And in a little while, we're going to have a little reading group discussing certain passages from a book on the occupation of Palestine. So people are here to come together and, you know, make their demands clear, but also bring the community together and learn something. Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about another part of the statement from the university, they were pledging safety and respect for all the people on campus and things like that. However, they're refusing to cut academic ties with academic institutions in Israel, having exchange students from Tel Aviv. I just wanted to ask you what you think that signifies about the bias of the university, and I wanted to ask you what that indicates to you, or what message that sends to you as a Palestinian person here on campus just trying to get by, really.
Yeah, for sure. So one of our kind of concerns with the university prior to, and I think it was in our November campaign, was the idea of their academic relationships, one being with the Tel Aviv University, because while of course we as students and the university are going to promote open dialogue and discussion and inclusion with other universities in these exchange programs, the one in Tel Aviv is different because it's a case where, one, Tel Aviv is built and the university is built on stolen, ethnically cleansed Palestinian land. But beyond that, the university itself is involved in the surveillance, aiding with Israeli military. The Tel Aviv University is also heavily involved with the Israeli military, which is committing a genocide. So it's unethical for them to have any ties with a university like that. And it's disappointing as a Palestinian, especially because we know, as of 200 days into the genocide, there are no standing universities in the Gaza Strip. There's not a single Gazan that has gone through the school year, not a single Gazan that's been able to graduate this year. So it shows where the university's priorities lie, in the sense that they're willing to have an exchange program and invite students from Tel Aviv over here, whilst also neglecting to even address the Palestinian students' concerns, or address the fact that there is a genocide that has wiped out Palestinians, either killing them and preventing them from graduating, or the bombing of their universities has prevented them from continuing their education. So there's clearly a bias there for one people over another.
Does this show you that the university here does not value the education of Palestinian people, or like a certain kind of like hypocrisy towards what institutions are valued?
100%, for sure. I mean, there has not been a single word out of our university or other universities in the West about the fact that every single university has been wiped out in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, they continue these exchange programs with universities like Tel Aviv University. So for sure, it shows their clear bias. And it's, again, very disappointing to see as Palestinian students, because we want to feel welcomed, and we want to feel like our campus is our home as well. But it's very hard to feel that way when we know where our university's priorities lie.
Just going back to the whole bias thing for a moment, I wanted to talk about the university's reaction to Dr. Yipeng Ji a couple months back, because he, you know, was liking tweets in support of, like, you know, the Palestinian people. He said that a lot of the things that he learned medically were in Palestine, so he showed gratefulness to the Palestinian people, so on and so forth. But I just wanted to ask, the way he was treated, I wanted to ask how it shows the bias of, like, who kind of deserves good healthcare, or who deserves healthcare, period, because doctors are taught to be indiscriminate. But when a doctor from the University of Ottawa shows support or shows that they want to help Palestinian people, they're completely shut out, they're completely ousted. And I just wanted to ask, what does this indicate about the university's position on how it values Palestinian lives or Palestinian well-being?
We all found the Yipeng's situation to be a despicable situation, because the university went out of their way to target a medical resident and get him suspended for, one, exercising his right to free speech. Nothing he said was instigating. Nothing he said was hatred. All he said was Palestinians deserve to live, end the genocide, a ceasefire. This should be a very humanitarian stance. This should be common sense. So for them to then take that statement, twist it, and then suspend him, shows again where their priorities lie, and it shows the fact that they don't value Palestinian life, because the extent of what he said was we should be valuing Palestinian lives, humans are dying, we need to end a genocide, and they chose to suspend him instead of addressing what he said and also meeting our demands to call for a ceasefire. So I mean, we know the situation in Gaza is indescribable at this point. It's been over 200 days of genocide. There's been over 40,000 martyrs, over 70,000 injured. Medical aid is still being prevented from coming in. Over 1 million people are infected with various diseases due to the famine, due to the displacement. And still 200 days in, the university has said nothing beyond, you know, targeting specific students who go out and say that this is bad. says a lot about their value for Palestinian life, which is none.
Known journalist Christiana Monpour went on The Daily Show a couple weeks ago and said, there are no journalists on ground in Gaza, or we don't have any journalists on the ground in Gaza. What does that tell you about how the Western media even views all the people doing the work on the ground over there? Like, do you think they even see them as credible journalists or people that deserve to be heard?
Western media has always painted us again as like reliable sources. They always, when there's any news that comes out from the Gaza Ministry of Health, they always kind of put it in the title as Gaza claims, or like their health administration claims, or sources their claim, as if it's like false or exaggerations or anything. So clearly they don't find journalists on the floor, on the ground in Palestine reliable, as well as the fact, coupled with the fact that the occupation actively targets these journalists on the ground. There's been over 100 or 200 martyred journalists since the beginning of the genocide. And I think that speaks to how much of a threat these journalists pose, because they are actively exposing this genocide in real time. And that's why they're so heavily targeted. So along with them being physically targeted by the Israeli occupation, obviously any news that manages to get out is going to kind of get shut down and discredited by Western media, because again, it serves their same imperialist interest.
That's all I have for you today. Awesome. Thank you so much.
That was Bushra Ben-Hamed on the University of Ottawa's Encampment for Palestine. Book lovers across Canada flock to their favorite local shops for a day of celebration, Canadian Independent Bookstore Day. In Ottawa, at the Spaniel's Tale, this came in the form of a raffle and participating in Ottawa's indie bookstore crawl from April 26th to the 28th. I sat down and spoke with Cole Davidson, co-founder of the Spaniel's Tale in Hintonburg, and here's our conversation.
Happy Independent Bookstore Day.
Thank you.
Amazing. You've been here since like 2022, right?
Yeah, that's right. Just over a year and a half now.
Okay, perfect. How's that been?
It's been great. The community has been really, really, really supportive, and we really couldn't ask for a better neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And how are you celebrating this day? You guys have a lot lined up.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. So for the second year in a row, we're doing the Ottawa Indie Bookstore Crawl together with a bunch of other independent bookstores in Ottawa and even one in Elmont this year. And so basically people can visit each of the stores, collect a stamp at each one, turn in their passport at the end of the day, and they could win $200 to spend at Ottawa's Indies.
Huge. And it lands on like a warm Saturday.
It's great. Yeah. Last year we had a lot of rain. Today we might get a little bit, but it's pretty nice compared to last year.
Yeah. The difference between independent bookstores versus like Amazon or big box bookstores, I always see that it comes down to like curation.
Yeah.
So can you tell me how Spaniel's Tale is curated?
Yeah, it really does come down to curation, because, you know, we're a fraction of the size of these other stores. And we can get all the same books. All of those books are available on our website, and we happily order them in for people if we don't have it. But what makes us unique is that we handpick every single book that's in our store. So we have more of an intimate knowledge of what we have. And we are also able to pick books specifically that we think our community will be interested in. We're able to promote Canadian authors and BIPOC authors and local authors. And so we read a lot of reviews, we talk to a lot of people, we get feedback from customers, publisher reps talk to us about books, and from there we just kind of drill it down to what we think our community will want.
Mm-hmm. And then you guys also have these events every now and then too. I think it was Kine, the drag queen,
yeah,
also was promoting their book here. So can you tell me why it's important for you guys to have this space for people to have events like that?
Indie bookstores are really more than just a place to shop and buy books. They really are the heart and hub of their community, and part of that is events. Whether that's local author events or authors from across the country or across North America, or even events without authors, just bringing people together for a common reason, for a common cause, for a book that they all have in common, something that maybe they wouldn't have been able to do anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting that you get to meet all these people from the community, but also these authors who have put so much work into these books. Can you tell me some of the most, like, if there's anyone that jumps out to the top of your head, the most interesting interactions that you've had so far?
Yeah, well, you mentioned Kine, and I mean, Kine obviously stands out. pretty much a celebrity, and probably I would say the biggest celebrity that we've had in the store. So that was a lot of fun. But it's also the local authors bring a lot too. Like, one of our very first events was with a local author named Carolyn Witzman, and she wrote a book called Clara at the Door with a Revolver. And it's about a true crime that happened in Toronto in the 1800s. And it was a wonderful book, really, really well written. And the event was great. We had over 60 people come out, and it continues to be one of our largest author events that we've ever hosted.
Wow. And I guess I kind of want to ask, because the like reading community is changing and evolving so much, we have things like Book Talk. There are people who are moving more towards like Kindle, and just overall more people interested in joining the reading community, which is amazing. Have you noticed any trends, particularly lately, within the 2 years that you've been here?
Yeah, definitely. When we opened the store, we didn't choose a niche. We kind of wanted to be a general trade bookstore and have everything, and we do, and we have continued to do that. But we have sort of started to fall into the niche of being Ottawa's romantasy bookstore, and that is a direct result of TikTok, I think, and the books that are being talked about on there. We did a midnight release party for the Iron Flame book that came out in November, and we had 100 tickets, and we sold out in the first day.
Huge.
And it was just incredible.
Yeah, wow, romanticy. Okay. Yeah. And are you reading anything right now, or do you have any recommendations?
I'm reading a book that comes out in a couple of months, I think. It's called The Last Murder at the End of the World, and it's sort of a sci-fi and murder mystery put together, and it's pretty interesting so far.
And I think I remember hearing Spaniel's Tale. Is that a reference to your dog?
It is, yeah. We have an English Springer Spaniel at home named Skype.
Skype? Okay, those are all the questions that I had for you today. Thank you so much for talking with me. That was my conversation with Cole Davidson, founder of the Spaniel's Tale, on Canadian Independent Bookstore Day.
The Ottawa International Food and Book Expo brought out-of-this-world flavors and performances to the capital. This nonprofit initiative gives authors, publishers, and vendors opportunities to market their work both in Ottawa and Toronto. This year's expo took place in the Horticulture Building at Lansdowne Park. The prairie-style venue was filled with around 50 tables, stacked with books, stuffed air animals, and dishes from around the world. Apart from opening the door to all of these amazing vendors, the expo's programming also included a variety of other events. While they are focused on creating a space where different communities and cultures interact, the mission of the expo is to raise awareness of the links between literacy and democracy, as well as issues like human rights and homelessness. Some of the conversations that took place that weekend include a special panel discussion on free speech and tips on how to tackle Ottawa's real estate market. There were swing and bachata dancing lessons for those wanting something more dynamic, but it seems like dating was the hot topic of the year, with a weekend-long slow dating event where people could sign up to meet a possible soulmate. However, there was controversy over the political inclinations of the event, since several speakers were part of the 2022 Freedom Convoy, the protest in which a myriad of people and trucks came to Ottawa to oppose COVID-19 restrictions. This, together with what the expo called slander spread by a scammer on their Facebook page, made it to one of the main exhibitors, the Mexican Embassy, pulled out of the event in a concern over their participants. Although I was really excited for the celebration of Mexican-Canadian literature, I was still able to see a couple of performances on Saturday that made the experience worth it. Starting with Navidance, this local dance academy sparked some life into the stormy morning with a series of sultry tunes. After them came one of the best known dance companies in Ottawa when it comes to Latin dance and Afrobeat.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We have some very, very special dancing, Afrobeat dancing. How many people like Afrobeat? Yes, of course. So we have Golden Flame. Abby, and Emily that are going to perform some Afrobeat. Give it up for Temi and Emily.
They raised the energy of the crowd, and had there not been so many chairs, I'm sure more than one person would have stood up to dance with them. For CHUO, I'm Marcela Gonzalez.
Experience Ezzy is a festival coming to Gatineau next weekend. May 18th will mark a joyous day for Asian culture and heritage. CHUO's Mickey, aka Kitty Pink, spoke with organizer Kai Whitcomb in the studio about the upcoming event. And here's their conversation.
Hello everyone! Today we have a special treat for you. Allow me to introduce Kai Whitcomb, the visionary director of Ottawa Thai Dancing Troupe. With boundless creativity and dedication, Kai showcased the vibrant tapestry of Thai dance tradition right here in Ottawa. And today, I'm so proud to have my big sister here. She's legendary of Thai dancing troupe and Thai culture in Ottawa. And today, she come here to talk about the upcoming event that she's been a part of the organize. It's called Experience Dasi in Gatineau. So how are you today, Kapi Kai?
I'm good. Hi, thank you for having me. And thank you for the introduction. You make me feel wonderful. But today I'm here as the coordinator for the Experience Asie or Experience Asia, organized by the city of Gatineau. And I am the coordinator for that.
Wow. I can't wait to go there, guys. It's always fun. Lots of food, lots of dance. Lots to talk about today, actually. I'm so grateful to have you here today.
Thank you.
So can you share with us the inspiration behind this organizing the Experience Dasi in Gatineau?
Yeah. The objective of the city is to celebrate the Asian Heritage Month. Mm-hmm. And this is the 18th edition. In wow. 2 years, we're going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary of mm-hmm. the Experience Asi. And this year we have, and the purpose is actually to create awareness of the Asian culture among the Canadian, French-Canadian community so that people can would know each other more, and then they'll know their roots and their culture, and that would create the harmony in living together. So that is the big whole purpose. And of course, to celebrate the Asian Heritage Month mm-hmm. in the month of May, and the event going to be on May the 18th from 11 to 3. And this year, I would like to let you guys know that we have about 15 countries, Asian wow. countries, to participate. And we have, apart from the music and dance, of course, we have a lot of food and a lot of traditions, a lot of ceremonies, a lot of medicines, a lot of fortune telling, a traditional Thai massage. Would you like to ask any more questions?
Oh, definitely, of course. For those who don't know, I've been experienced this festival since I first came here back in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I always like, wow. I'm always said, wow. Every time I'm like, oh, so I go to Korea, I go to China, I go to everywhere in Asia without paying my expensive flight ticket to go there. But I can experience Asian culture there.
Right.
So
right.
This is a must for you guys to visit. Anyway, so let's continue with our second question. I would like to know, how do you go about selecting and creating the culture performance, and also how you selecting the workshops activities for this festival?
my regular normal rules is I would invite people who are capable of, first of all, it has to be Asian countries, and it has to be either the community, the group, or the embassies that is capable to display their countries. And it's not only for about the information about the country, it's about the culture, it's about the traditions, it's about the families and friends getting together and learning about each other. Mm-hmm. And I sort of rotate countries, but there are several countries, like, for example, Indonesia. Like, this is a big, huge community, and they bring in Pasar Pagi, which is the morning market. You will have a lot of beautiful, wonderful Indonesian food, homemade. And then you have the traditional dance, and then you can even join in the Indonesian way of lie dancing.
Ooh.
So we do that with all of the countries. We have at the end of each section, people join in to do that. And we have Korea.
Okay.
And this Korean Association, they are wonderful organizer to participate. And they have been with us since almost 8 years now.
Wow.
And I don't have a selection. It's who wants to come in and if they meet the criteria. And the point is to not all, because they are the one who make the party happen. So it's not just me. They have to be aware of my vision of how I want to see the way the event going. So it's not coming to the event. Everybody who come to my event, they'll feel like they're coming to meet people, and they interact and they join in. You have the dance, you see the dance, you have the food, you feel the food, you taste the food. It satisfies all your five senses.
Oh wow.
But for those of you who have more than five senses, I can't help you.
Oh my god. The sixth sense, nope. Maybe, who knows, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Okay, so, and how you measure, because this year is 18 year, how you measure the success of this event?
The success of this event, I really rely on the feedback from the public. Like this year, now this is a good question. This year, we thought that there's some complication due to an object fell down from the roof at the Agora room where we held the event. And the city had to reconsider the event. But they got a feedback, like lots of feedback from the public or from the general public in general that they cannot cancel our event. It has to happen somehow. So I was called in and we went to check out the place. So this year there'll be a slight change. We won't be able to use the Agora. It will be blocked off, but we'll use the festival room, which is a big, huge, beautiful room to do the exhibition. And the food area will be at the same place.
Okay.
So the dynamic of the event this year is a bit different. And you know, we all need a change anyway, and we should embrace the change. So we're going to have fun anyway.
I think it's like it happened for the reason, but definitely it's going to be more fun.
Yes, we survived COVID, so this is nothing comparing to COVID.
Definitely. Oh my God. So what is the highlight of this year festival? I believe that my listener want to know what it is.
Oh my goodness. I actually have two set of highlights. The first one is the exhibit. The Asian hospitality from these different 15 countries. Number two, which is the new thing. I always, you know, my job is to get people together to celebrate the Asian. But since we live in Canada, especially in Gatineau, so this year we're going to show the French Canadian culture to all of those Asian roots also, so that they know what it is, the two ancient culture. We're going to showcase that also.
Oh, Okay, so we blend in Quebecois to Asian.
Yes,
that's interesting.
Yes, and at the opening, mm-hmm. Imagine you must if you know the song, the French song called Degeneration.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, we use that song to it's about the you know the French Canadian old times and how their grandfathers. Raise their children and how their children love their countries. And we use that song as the theme song. And then I have the Ottawa Taiko drummer playing with them. And all the performers going to, like the Thai is going to do the respect to elder ceremony. And mm-hmm. the First Nation would do the smushing ceremony at the same time. And all the artists would participate. It would be a sight to be seen. And that happening right at 11:20. So you should not miss that.
Wow. Oh, my God. I kind of like, ooh. I start to like, wow.
Yes, yes. And all of the artists who come to perform at the event, they don't just come, perform, and leave. Mm-hmm. They come and stay, and they mingle with other artists, mingle with the public. So it's a rare chance that the organizer have something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage them to do that because they themselves is the party maker.
Mm-hmm.
And when the public come and public see that, wow, it's very special. I look forward. I live to this day.
Oh, wow. Like, for me, the guys, like, you guys don't see that right now. I'm really excited myself. Oh, my God.
And not only that, just for your information,
mm-hmm.
Paruji, which is Mickey, mm-hmm. going to help me out by being the helping with the MC and helping me doing a lot of things on the day. So if you come to see her.
Definitely, yes.
And if you are a fan of this channel, you come and tell us, you get free lunch.
Woo,
either the Thai
guys.
Or the Cambodian or the Korean food or the Indonesian food. You get free lunch from this CHOU.
CHUO?
CHUO 89.1 FM.
Wow. If you're a listener, don't miss that chance. You get the free food, guys. And how do you engage and involve in local community in the plan and execution for the festival? How do you like engage and involve?
Engage and involve. You know what? These are these 15 organizations that mm-hmm. helping me out to do this. We are not just organization. We are friends also. And even though we don't see each other all year, we see each other once every year at Experience RC, and it's more like the family getting together once a year, and they mm-hmm. want to do it. They want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to eliminate and change some country, and they said, no, they really want to be there. So this is something very unique that mm-hmm. I love to do. And I love for all of them to be. And it's not just one country. They all like that.
Wow.
And how do I engage them? They engage themselves to me. Yeah, it's automatic.
Oh,
people who come to join us, Experience RC, never leave. So the event is never going to be smaller. It's going to be bigger and bigger and bigger.
Wow, I cannot wait for that. Mm-hmm. And how people can like go there? So where is the location, and how people can like follow more for more information about the
Experience RC? Yes, we have the City of Gatineau create a Facebook page. It's of the Experience RC, and there's information on the tab that it said about. There's some information. The event start at 11:00, but people start coming at 10:30. We are there from 8:00 on to do the setup,
mm-hmm.
and it lasts until 3:00, and then the address is at La Maison du Citoyen, number 25 Laurier Street in Gatineau.
And how can people get a hold on you, Pikai?
Oh, gosh. You can see me. Just type my name, Guy Whitcomb, and you'll see all kinds of things that I do. And we have the website. And should I give you... Paruchi is going to give you guys my contact numbers and information on the website of CSUO.
Definitely. We will post that on our social media so that like people can get a hold on you and also can like get for more information about the event. So thank you so much for coming today, Kapikai.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
You too. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's it for this week's episode of The Mosaic. Thanks so much for tuning in. Music for The Mosaic is by Helizna. To listen to this episode and previous ones, go to chuo.fm/podcasts. If you're interested in joining our news team, email news@chuo.fm. We'll see you next week, Thursday at 1 p.m.